We'd like to welcome some old faces back. Okay, Rabbi Isai. There's a saying in Yiddish, we say, do Torah this chokhma, which basically means is that when somebody really possesses knowledge of Torah, it comes along with general wisdom in many areas. There's a well-known, very interesting story regarding Reb Chaim Volozhiner Talmud. Talmud comes to Reb Chaim to ask his advice about a shidduch, which was suggested to him. And the girl in question was the daughter of a man who recently became rich after a lifetime of extreme poverty. So Maisa, the man, although he was unlearned, but nevertheless he was prepared to shower his new son-in-law, so with anything that was needed. And the Bocher Lamaisa, who happened to be one of the best students of the yeshiva, only wanted to sit and learn for quite a long time without financial worries. And the father-in-law really promised it. Lamaisa came to ask his Rebbe Reb Chaim because he was bothered by the fact that his prospective father-in-law himself completely was lack of learning, did not have any knowledge. It's like to have a shiur talmid chacham also. On the other hand, but he was willing to support him, should be able to sit and learn for a number of years. Reb Chaim happened to know the personality of this particular father-in-law, and he answered with a moshel about a popular delicacy, which at those times, it's hard to relate to sometimes as times change in terms of things that are considered to be delicacies, but those times what they used to be, something that was to be a choshev and machal that was served, it was radish fried in honey. Radish fried in honey. So Reb Chaim says the following, that the radish says sent the shatchan to the honey to make a match. And he says, the honey replied and said, how can there be a match between us, between the radish and the honey? He says, the fact is we're complete opposites for many, many reasons. And number one, he says, the honey said, I'm pale and you're dark-skinned. Then he said, I'm soft, said the honey, and you're hard. I'm sweet, and you're bitter. So how can possibly such a match work? So the radish was not deterred, and he sends the shatchan back with a new suggestion. And the radish was prepared to come to a compromise to make the match work. And the radish says like this, he said, if I peel my dark skin, I become light. And he said, if I am grated, you grate the radish, then I become soft. And he says, and if even if I fry myself, right, it will eliminate a lot of the bitter taste. So the honey, after seeing the great length that the radish was prepared to go, finally agreed to the match, to the shidduch. So the marriage contract was written up between the honey and the radish. And the two basically fried together. So those invited to the party, said Reb Chaim, those invited to the party began to discuss now what bracha do you make on this delicacy. You see, the question was the honey the dominant element? So the bracha would be shahakul. On the other hand, the question was the radish the dominant? If that's the case, then the bracha is hadoma. And for some discussion, as aloha happens to be in that case, the guests concluded that the radish, despite all of its changes, was the more dominant, and Hadama was to be recited. So you see, says Reb Chaim, knowing the personality of this father-in-law, he says, the radish made such great effort. He made such great effort in order to change, and did all in his power to make himself desirable, but he still remained the dominant. So this is in your case, he said, the proposed shidduch, no matter, he says, how much your father-in-law is prepared to do for you, he's always going to remain dominant. I don't think it's a good shidduch for you. Mr. Chaim. It's the way of bringing something together with a very interesting practical mashal of those times. Another situation was, and you may have heard this from different great people, but nonetheless from whoever it is, but it's recorded in the name of Reb Chaim Volozhin. Now the case was that the certain piece of land was a subject of a dispute between two people, two farmers who owned land, adjacent property, one next to the other. So each one claimed, this particular land belongs to me. so unable to reach a compromise. So the men decided that they're going to take the matter to Reb Chaim in order that he should basically render a decision. So after Reb Chaim, he hears two sides. Reb Chaim asked to be taken to the field in question. He wants to see what the area of dispute is. And Reb Chaim, he surveyed the boundaries, looks it over, and asked all kinds of probing questions from the two farmers. Lamaisa, all of his efforts to bring the men to a compromise was no fail. He was not, did not succeed. Not succeed to make a compromise. Neither side would allow himself to relent, and each one insisted that the whole field belongs to him. Suddenly, Reb Chaim leans forward and sort of like tilts his head to the ground as if listening, as if the ground was saying something. So one of the litigants inquired of Reb Chaim and said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'll tell you the truth. I heard two sides of the story. You say the land belongs to you. You say the llama is, I want to hear what the land has to say." And the land said, "Eventually, both of them are going to come to me." So this is, again, this is a classical Reb Chaim's wisdom of understanding, you know, some things are not really worth fighting over. At the end of the day, really, which is true, that something we had in the previous year, which the Vilna Gaon used to say, that if a shul, he said, was built with only pure intentions, with pure kavanah, right from the very beginning, and even the materials, time in the beginning is all the way from the beginning, that even the materials that are being used, not to the actual building, but before that, the materials that are being bought would be bought from worthy people, and those that are davening there in such a way, we never have their davening disturbed, he said, by any distracting thoughts. People would really be able to daven b'kavana, because this atmosphere generates a tremendous level of kedusha. The fact that it was built lishma, we built purely with pure kavanas right from the beginning. And so Reb Chaim pointed out and said that if something such as inanimate, like wood, has no life, so something like you're building a shul, bricks and stones and so on, if that can be affected by the intentions of how it is built and who builds it, so how much more can an actual human being be shaped by the intentions of those who form him, parents who are raising children and put in the effort and the koyach. So the intentions of the parents play also a very, very effective role, not just what they do, but the intention, the pure intentions in terms of succeeding in providing a proper direction of life, you know, for their children. It is said that those who lived in Reb Chaim Volozhin's presence, seeing him as a perfect model, a role model for them, they could never stray too far away, because the example of Reb Chaim's words and deeds and purity of intention had more a profound effect than studying any sefer. Just looking at Reb Chaim, just a living Musar sefer. But he said that when the Pesuk says regarding Moshe Rabbeinu Vayelech Moshe in Parshas Vayelech, Nesomim Vayelech, so the Medrash says Ein Vayelech. Where did he go? Because it doesn't say exactly where he went. So the Medrash says Ein Vayelech El Loshen Techocha. He went to give Musar. He went to give Musar. So the Bina Litzim is one of the great commentators going back, you know, to the 13, 1400s. Lived in Venice most of his life. And one of the great, great Mefarshim, also the author of the Sefer Gidulei Truma. So says the Bina Litzim, if a person just observed Moshe Rabbeinu, didn't have to say anything, just seeing him, how he walked, how he behaved, that itself is Musar. Ein Vayelech El Loshen Techocha. Vayelech Moshe, if Moshe walks, Moshe goes, Moshe comes, just watching Moshe Rabbeinu, that itself, that's a Loshen Techocha. You don't need a greater Musar Sefer than just observing the behavior and the Hanhoge of great people. And that is something, again, that we see all the time. And we should take advantage of that when we are in the presence of a very choshev people, to really to learn from them. And certainly if we are connected with them, invariably we will be affected, and certainly all that much more for the better. So we go here, Rabbi Yisai, to the Ruach Chaim. It's Daf Lamed Gimel. This is the 20th shir, by the way, Baruch Hashem. And it's at the bottom paragraph, Vezehu Mamorom, on Daf Lamed Gimel. Rabbi Chaim here is talking about, just on this mongo, where the Mishnah tells us, Ashloisha Dvarim Oyelam Oymeid. The world basically is only able to exist and stands on three pillars: Al Torah, Al Avodah, Al Gimelus Chasodim. So Reb Chaim here continues on further regarding the union of Torah, the union of the pillar that sustains the world, which is the pillar of Torah. And he goes on further. V'zeh Mamorim Zechroinim Lebrocha says, this is the meaning that we find in Masechet Bavli Kama, actually. Staf Yud Zayin. The Gemara there, in the Shailah, the Gemara asked the following question. The question there, the Gemara was raised, Im Talmud Godel or Maisa Godel. The question is, what is greater, studying Torah or doing mitzvahs? There is no question, learning Torah is also a mitzvah. It's one of the greatest mitzvahs, right? But the opportunity, let's say, to study or to do many, many mitzvahs, instead of just studying. So if I have the opportunity, let's say, I can study for 2-3 hours, but maybe in 2-3 hours, I can do 10 different mitzvahs. Which is more important? Is studying Torah the greater? Im Talmud Godel, is studying more important? Is Limud HaTorah more important or doing mitzvahs? And Reb Chaim says that the original question was based upon, the original question, even to ask that question, was based upon, because they thought, she talking this possible, Maisa mitzvahs mibli limud temidi. Those who asked the question thought that it's possible to do mitzvahs without continuous learning. In other words, if it's possible to do mitzvahs without continuous learning, then you don't need continuous learning, possibly. And maybe doing mitzvahs is more important, right? If it's possible to do mitzvahs without continuous learning, so there is a possibility to entertain, then maybe doing mitzvahs might be more important than learning, says Reb Chaim, because if that's the case, im kein, ein halimud rak mitzvachas. It comes out that learning Torah is one mitzvah, like any other mitzvah, except it's a greater mitzvah. Im kein, ein halimud rak mitzvachas, kama shara mitzvahs, except it's a greater mitzvah. But at the end of the day, learning Torah is only one mitzvah. Now, if learning Torah is only one mitzvah, so you have 613 mitzvahs, 612 other mitzvahs. So instead of maybe devoting my time to studying Torah, which is only one mitzvah, maybe I should devote my time but to do many, many more mitzvahs, a variety of other mitzvahs. That's what the question was based on. So which is more important? Is studying Torah more important? Because they thought it's only one mitzvah. They thought that it's possible to do mitzvahs without continuous learning. So if you can do mitzvahs without continuous learning, learning itself, they consider it to be one mitzvah. So you still have another 612. May do a lot of others. I may do a lot of other mitzvahs. That was the question. They came to the conclusion. In other words, they delved down to the depth of the situation, and they realized. In other words, the whole premise was wrong. It's impossible to do a mitzvah really properly without learning. You can't really even build a sukkah without knowing all the intricate details. You cannot write film, right, unless actually the cipher, for example, knows how to write film, and even to put on film properly, turn out to be all speak out between the first bracha and the second bracha. And all the various halachas, you know, wearing film, you have to have a gufnaki, you have to have a clean body. If somebody has an urge to go to the bathroom, right, then the halacha is you should remove your film, go to the bathroom, and then put them on again. That's one of the, specifically dealing with film. Film, very, very important. That's one of the reasons that although all mitzvahs, we start to be mechanech our children. We start to train in our children, right, at a young age. Depending, according, of course, to the intellectual capacity. The age of 7, 8, 9 years old, right, all mitzvahs. But not film. Film, we wait very close to the bar mitzvah. Some do it 2 weeks before, some a month before. That's it. Why don't you put on film at the age of 8? You put on tzitzis, right, child, you cut his hair at the age of 3, you put on a little tzitzis already. Right, you put on a yarmulke, you put on already. You haven't tried to daven a little bit, right, and so on. So why don't you put on film when he's 7, 8, 9? You know why? Because he's not responsible enough to have a gufnoki to make sure that the guf is properly clean. That's why we don't risk. It's this question of balancing, you know, what we gain and what we might lose. So therefore we wait until you become close to the bar mitzvah age or bar mitzvah age, then you are fully responsible. So now, the point is you cannot do any mitzvah properly without limud. I remember, this is really a true story. This goes back as sukkah's time. I believe this is at least 55 years ago, growing up in Toronto, Canada. And it was after the meal, after the suda, on the sukkah's afternoon, you take a little bit of a stroll. And walking down one of the streets, you hear at a distance, a Jewish neighborhood, you hear somebody singing Zemiris of Yontif, you know, coming from a sukkah. So it's just very interesting to see, you know, where that person is. Certainly, if you come closer to the sound, you know, where the voice is coming out, you see a number of people sitting and singing. Sure enough, they're sitting in a sukkah, but the sukkah was inside the garage. The garage was covering over. In case it rains, best place to build a sukkah is in the garage. Didn't know that halacha. Didn't know that halacha is not allowed to have any covering, a roof overhead. Meant very well. He built himself a sukkah. Clearly, the sukkah was not raining. Sukkah was inside a garage. Very safe. Garage door was open, and sitting in the sukkah. Again, if you don't know the halacha, you're not able to become the mitzvah. In his mind, he was doing the great thing. And I'm sure in Shemayim, they'll give him credit. Because Kavana was Latoyve. His intentions were well. But the fact is, he did not do it right. So here again. So at the end of the day, any mitzvah that you want to do, you need the limud. You need the learning. So that's the case. V'lekach, Talmud Gadol. Therefore, learning is greater. Because why? Because learning is two things. Number one, it's a mitzvah itself, and it brings you to do other mitzvahs. So in learning, Limud HaTorah, you have all the Tarayag mitzvahs, really, right, stemming out of it. Because without learning, you're not able to do all the other mitzvahs properly either. So when a person studies Torah, there's two things happening. A, he has a mitzvah for the learning itself, and that learning now, right, facilitates and allows him to do all the other mitzvahs. So it comes out that learning, really, is the source or the seed, right, from which the outgrowth of all mitzvahs come from. So again, therefore Talmud Gadol. Therefore learning is greater, they concluded. Number one, itself is a ma'isa mitzvah, it's an act of a mitzvah. And also the gamevil chola mitzvahs, it leads to all other mitzvahs. Or biltoh, because without learning properly, ein ma'isa gamkein, you cannot really have a proper ma'isa, doing a proper mitzvah. And therefore, v'lazek kivnu gamkein. And that's why our chachomim also made another point. They made another point. They said, Loi ha-medrash ikar la-maise. It's not, you know, talk is cheap. The ikar is the maise. Loi ha-medrash ikar. Learning alone is not enough. You need the maise. And he goes on to explain. Kim hoya ikar kavona salimut. If the main point of learning Torah would only be rakmashu makai mitzvah, again, if the main purpose of learning is the fact, because it's a great mitzvah, kilimuru mitzvah, so that someone might say, you know what? Maybe I'll take time off from learning, and right, and I'll do other mitzvahs instead. Imken yitochin, sheyafsik milimudoy. Then maybe he'll make a decision to stop learning. The yekam all of all Torah, and he'll remove from himself the burden of Torah. The yoimar, and he'll say sheyafsik b'mitzvahs, and instead I'll be yoisik b'mitzvahs. Lozeh omar. So Chazal came and said shegam tachlis alimud yamaisa. That the tachle, if you want to do mitzvahs, for that itself you have to learn. So you can't get away without learning. Because whatever it is, the learning is not just learning in its own right, but the learning actually leads and gives you the ability to do all the other mitzvahs. Shem roitza lasid, because if you only want to do a mitzvah, sorach lilmoid, before that you have to learn. Eich uma, how and what. So it comes out at the bottom line, imken hi hakoil, so the Torah really includes everything. For kolelas hakoil, all the Tariq mitzvahs really come out of the seed of Torah. Because without learning, really, you don't have proper mitzvahs. So therefore, learning, therefore, is the shayrish, is the root of everything. So, but don't make a mistake, says Reb Chaim. Now that I told, and I really put up the learning of Torah on such a high level, so maybe you'll think that what? I don't have to put on tefillin, I'll learn instead. Maybe I don't have to give tzedakah, I'll learn instead, and so on. Says Reb Chaim, hey, Nemes, it's true. I want you to know that if someone only learns Torah and he abandons the mitzvahs, he is is like denying the presence of Hashem. Because serving Hashem means you have to have the balance. You need the Torah and you need the mitzvahs. But as great as learning Torah is, it's not something that really at the expense of learning that you're going to lose the mitzvahs. Like Tzorech Lasso is called mitzvahs Hashem. You have to still do all the mitzvahs, lasei sukkah bizmano, to do a sukkah in the right time, tzitzis, tefillin, lulav, shofar when it applies, Shabbos, yontiv, matzah, right, coming up very soon, he says, v'deimeyen, and all the similar mitzvahs. Not only that, v'chol chayvez ishal reyehu, till now with the examples where ben odom l'mokim, it's you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But also, learning Torah does not exempt you from mitzvahs ben odom l'chaveroi, between you and your fellow man. V'chol mitzvahs chevra enushis, all the mitzvahs that society, living with people, right? All the mitzvahs that society demands, that's in relating one with the other. Kvar hoy roi sonu chazal. Chazal already pointed out to us b'moed koten, which is daftes. And this is basically, this is the principle. Any mitzvah that you cannot make a shliach, that you, right? You have to do it yourself. You can't say, I'm going to learn. There's certain mitzvahs that you can make a, send a messenger to do it. There are other mitzvahs. For example, you can't have somebody eat matzah instead of you. You can't have somebody put on tefillin instead of you. There's certain mitzvahs that you can send. You don't have to build this sukkah yourself. You can have somebody else build it. That you can do. But there's certain mitzvahs that you cannot send a shliach. Any mitzvah that you cannot send a shliach, you cannot send a messenger, you have to do it yourself. You have to do it yourself. You have to stop learning. Torah does not push away the obligation of mitzvahs. This is what the Gemara says in Moed Koten, that any mitzvah, kishi efshe lasos al dei acherim, any mitzvah, if you cannot discharge it through others, in other words, any mitzvah that you must do it, then you have to do it and stop learning. Mechuyev lahaniach avura halimut. You have to, because of the mitzvah, you have to stop and leave the learning for a moment. The whole mitzvah is manius, and the truth is all mitzvahs that come in a certain time, like matzah, shofar, lulav, you cannot have a shliach, you have to do it yourself. So guess what? Not learning has its time, doing mitzvah, everything has to have its proper time. You can't mix it, and everything has to be done inappropriately in the right time. The chen shah mitzvahs, the same thing other mitzvahs as well, he says, im hu roye, if a person sees, there's certain mitzvahs that sometimes you can't send the shliach. You are able. But there are circumstances that now I can't. If you can't, then you have to stop learning and do it yourself. There are mitzvahs that you are able to make a shliach for. But if a situation arises that you can't, then you have to do it yourself. And close the Gemara, whatever it is. So he said, then it's the same thing like matzah. You have to do it. Zilulah came. They said, but otherwise, al yivatel milimud certainly should not be mavatel from his learning. V'day b'zeh, and he said, it's enough. He said, to make that point. So, on one hand, limud haTorah really is the greatest of all things. But when it comes time to do mitzvahs, then you have to do the mitzvah that you have to do. But at the same time, you have to recognize that mitzvahs, doing a lot of mitzvahs, learning is more than doing a lot of mitzvahs. And therefore, if it's the choice between the two, learning stands higher, because learning itself is a mitzvah, and even a greater mitzvah, and it leads you to do other mitzvahs. Because without learning, you're not even able to know how to do the other mitzvahs. So this is the way Reb Chaim sets it apart. And these are the two categories between learning and mitzvah. I think we should go to the sheet. Time permitting, we have some interesting, quite a few interesting situations here. And we bring it down over here. First item is here that we just learned from the Ruach Chaim, so we should know what we're going to be talking about, so we brought down again a few lines here from the Ruach Chaim we just learned right now. And that is, Reb Chaim pointed out, we just learned a few moments ago, that originally there was a discussion, what's more important, studying Torah or doing mitzvahs? So, Achakach Nimnu V'Gomru, Reb Chaim said, after that they came to the conclusion, B'yoysim Choykrim Amitus Adover, when they really delved down to the depth of the situation, Ki Efshe Lasois Shum Maise Karoi B'li Limut. It's not possible to do any mitzvah perfectly if you don't learn. L'kach, and therefore, Talmud Godel. To the end of the day, learning stands higher. Because why? Because learning encompasses both. Which both? Number one, Ki Hu Ba'atzmoy Maise, learning itself is a mitzvah, and also it leads to other mitzvahs. V'gamei v'ilchol mitzvahs we had before. U'bilto, without learning, ein maise gamkein, we don't have a maise. So before we go further, I want you to take a look here on the just left side, number two, on top. Just three lines of the Mishnah Berurah himself. Now of course you know the Mishnah Berurah, the Chofetz Chaim, basically wrote the Sefer Mishnah Berurah to cover all the halachas of Baruch Chaim, dealing with tefillah, davening, Shabbos, and so on. All the basic halachas, and go on to explain it. In the introduction, the Hakdamat Hilchos Shabbos, we have just a few lines actually here that the Mishnah Berurah writes in the name of Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz. And Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz said it in a drosh in the Sefer Yaros Davash. Let's take a look here, number two on the left side on top. The Sefer Urim V'tumim is the Sefer on Choshe Mishpat written by Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz. B'sifra, and he wrote it, B'sifra Yaros Davash. Look what Rabbi Yonasan said. It's impossible, listen to this, it's impossible that someone should not somehow, by mistake, transgressing some infraction of Shabbos, Im lo yilmoid kol adinim al buriyom heitev heitev. There's so many intricate details in the Shabbos. But you have question of Boyer selecting, you have question, of course, you know, Hilchos Bishul that most people know about, not to cook on Shabbos. Everyone knows you have to have a black on Shabbos. But then it comes the issue of taking out the shul and putting it back, all these various shilas. And it goes on and on and on and on. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes, and Sefer Yahar Zavash said, if you don't really go through Hilchos Shabbos, it's kamat not shayach that a Shabbos you go by, that somewhere, you'll be doing a little aveira here and there. Not realizing it. Because you're just not aware of it. So here again, this is the point, this is really what Reb Chaim is saying, Reb Chaim. He says, Bilta ein Maisa. Without limud HaToyah, without learning, he said, you're not aware how to do the Maisa properly, to do the Mitzvah properly. As he said, Yefsha before, Lasa Shu Maisa Karoi Beli Limud. You're not possible to do any Mitzvah properly if you don't really learn the details of it. Okay, so we go back to number one, Rabbi Sahib, and we have here the Beis Halevi. Of course, the Beis Halevi is the Yosha Ber, which is the father of Reb Chaim Brisker. The Sefer Beis Halevi in Parshas Yisro. He talks about here the aspect, we're talking about the role of learning of Limud HaTorah. And he says the following. We find that Moshe Rabbeinu takes Vayikach Sefer HaBris, Vayikra Bo Zneom. Moshe Rabbeinu takes the Sefer HaBris. He starts reading, you know, he's introducing the Torah to the Jewish people. Vayomer, and they said, Kol HaShadibar Hashem Nasa V'Nishma. Everybody knows that, the famous phrase. The Jewish people said, whatever Hashem requests from us, Nasa, we will do, and we will hear. In other words, they did something very unusual. But in a usual situation, a person says, first I'm going to hear, then I can commit. Very difficult to be ready to commit before hearing. But yet, with the Yidden, the Jewish people, they trusted HaKadosh Baruch Hu to such an extent that he said, without even hearing, whatever Hashem says, Nasa, we're going to do, and afterwards we're going to hear. Nasa v'nishma. It's a tremendous, tremendous high level of commitment because they have full trust in the Emunah and the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Now, Masechta Shabbos, the Beis Halevi brings down the Gemara on Shabbos and tells the following. Dorash Reb Simoi, Reb Simoi darshened the following. He said, B'shoa she'igdimu Yisrael Nasa l'nishma. When the Jewish people, when they proceeded, they said, Nasa we will do before Nishma. Right? When they said Nasa before Nishma, you know what happened? Yardu shishim riboy shomalach hashoris. 600,000 angels came down. Because at that time there were 600,000 Jews. So 600,000 angels came down. The koshu l'cholechon mi Yisrael, shnei ksorim. Each malach gave each year 2 crowns. This were being, here again, behind the scenes. Who would have known that? This is a Gemara. That the time of standing at Har Sinai, and Yidin said Nasa v'nishma, the fact they said Nasa v'nishma, 2 things, 2 commitments. Nasa, we will do. Nishma, we will hear, we will listen. So 600,000 malachim came and gave each yid 2 matonis, 2 gifts, 2 crowns. 1 crown for Nasa, because they said Nasa, and 1 crown in exchange for Nishma. Alright? Echad kenen Nasa, ve'echad kenen Nishma. The Yesh Ovin, the Beis Halevi is asking the following question. What's it got to do because they said Nasa before Nishma? Had they gotten the other order? Had they said first Nishma, we will listen? Right? And then Nasa, we will do. So they also, right? They also accepted 2 things. We're going to listen, and we're going to do. So they deserve 2 crowns. Why is it because they were Magdim? Why is it because they, right? Why is it because they accepted Nasa before Nishma, they deserve 2 crowns? Nasa and Nishma are 2 items, are 2 commitments. If it would have been the other way around, if they would have said Nishma and then Nasa, so they also accepted 2 things, they deserve 2 crowns. Why is it because the Higdimu? Why is it Bishosh Higdimu Vloyomar, the Gemara should have said, Bishosh Omru, when they said Nasa v'Nishma? So we see from the Gemara, Muchachas proves, the Raka Yidei HaHagdome, it's only because they preceded. It's because they said first Nasa, then Nishma, and it's something to do with the Hagdome. The fact that they serve first Nasa, then Nishma, that's why Zochu Lahanishnei Kesorim. V'yishlohovim have to understand, Heich Tolu B'Hagdome. Why are the 2 crowns dependent on the fact they said Nasa before Nishma? They would have said Nishma first and then Nasa. They also said 2 things, Nishma and Nasa. 2 crowns. Why does the Gemara say Bishosh Higdimu? Because why? Because they gave the precedence first to Nasa and Nishma. What's got to do doing it first? Doing Nasa first. And he says the following, this is a very important yesoid. By the way, I should mention that the exact same thing that the Beis Halevi says over here, the truth of the Chassam Sofer himself and the Chidush Chassam Sofer in the Sechus Nedorim, Daf Pei Aleph, says the same thing, but he touches a different Gemara with that, another Gemara with that, but the same idea, both of them, both the Beis Halevi and before the Beis Halevi, the Chassam Sofer. Let's see what the Beis Halevi says over here. V'aner Ali, it appears to me, V'yuvin Gamkim, we will understand again. Lom Omru Yisrael Nasa V'nishma. Why in fact did they say Nasa first and then Nishma? What would have been so bad they would have said Nishma V'nasa? V'loy Nishma V'nasa. We will hear and we will accept. So he said the following. First of all, how do we interpret? What does Nasa mean? What does Nishma mean? How do we interpret it? These are two separate commitments. How do we interpret the two commitments? Well, so he says, we find in Yisra B'Zohar HaKodesh, we find the Zohar HaKodesh tells us, Nasa means to do positive acts, to do mitzvahs. Nasa means be'uvdin tovin, to do positive acts. Nishma means, Nishma is something that you hear. Nishma means learning. Nishma means b'fizgome deraisa, the words of Torah. Hare. What you see from the Zohar HaKodesh, what do you see? The commitment is like this, the two commitments. Nasa is the Kabbalah al-Kima mitzvahs. Nasa means we are committing to do mitzvahs. What's Nishma mean? It's a commitment to learn. Nishma have a Kabbalah slimud ha-Torah k'doshu. Now, what is the learn of learning? What is the role of learning? So v'hinei yidua. The limud ha-Torah hu mishnei ponim. There are two aspects of limud ha-Torah. Very important, you saw it again, mentioning this again, the Chassam Sofer says the exact same thing. There are two aspects of Limud HaTorah. Echad. One purpose of Limud HaTorah is in order to know how to do mitzvahs. Like Reb Chaim said before. We had in Ruach Chaim. Because without learning, you don't know how to do mitzvahs. That means is that learning really is a vehicle to do mitzvahs. That's one aspect. One aspect of learning is in order to know, because if you don't learn, you don't know how to do the mitzvahs. So one aspect of learning is it's a vehicle to do mitzvahs. That's one aspect. Echod, one aspect, kedei leida heich umalasos. One aspect is to know and how to do the mitzvahs. Because v'lo yilmoy, if you don't learn, heich yikayim, how are you going to do mitzvahs? V'lo yamor is chosid. Chazal say in Sechtes Ovis. Someone who is unlearned man cannot expect to be a chosid. Why? He wants to do the right thing, but doesn't know. He just doesn't know. Matter of fact, he goes more than that. For example, women don't have a chiyuv of learning Torah. But yet, they have a chiyuv of learning to know how to do the mitzvahs that they are obligated. For example, a woman, right, has to keep Shabbos, so she has to learn, she has to have some knowledge of Shabbos. So the learning of Hilchos Shabbos is not as a mitzvah of Limud HaTorah. The learning is in order to be a vehicle to know how to do the mitzvahs. So one aspect of learning is as a vehicle to do mitzvahs. So even though they don't have a mitzvah quoted learning like women, they don't have the mitzvah of learning Torah, but they still have an obligation to learn those mitzvahs that they're mechuyev to do. Why? It's a heksher. The limud HaTorah is a heksher allows them to be able to do the mitzvahs, as he goes on. But gam anoshim, even women, she'eidim mechuyev is b'limud HaTorah. Even women per se don't have a chiyuv of limud HaTorah, but they still have a chiyuv to learn those mitzvahs that they must do. They have to learn the details of those mitzvahs that are noyeg, right, that apply to them. Do you realize the Shulchan Aruch said that a woman in the morning should also open up a siddur, should say the bracha birchas haTorah? Hashem Soyse and Savonil, we say Lasik B'Divre Soyre, Vahara, No, we say Hashem B'Chabonim B'Chlamim, what kind of Birchis HaTorah? So the B'Soyse says, right, the B'Soyse says, you know why, B'Shem Durkeh? Because even though they have no chiyuv of learning Torah, but they have to learn Torah as a vehicle to not do the mitzvahs. That's the reason. Because all the mitzvahs, women are mechuyev in all the lavim. They're only exempted from certain time-bound mitzvahs, the mitzvahs that are time-bound. But otherwise, there's not Zman Groma, right? So now, Omnom. So that's the first aspect. The first aspect of Limud is to know how to do mitzvahs. Now I want to ask you a question. Take the Vilna Goyim. He learned Kol HaTorah Kula. He does not need learning to know how to do mitzvahs. He knows all the Shulchan Aruch. Comes now a second mitzvah. Now comes a mitzvah Limud HaTorah, not because of knowing how to do mitzvahs. There's an independent mitzvah. Learning Torah is a mitzvah. Not because of leading to do mitzvahs, because of the mitzvah, independent mitzvah itself. Omnom ba'anoshim, by men. Yesh oid mala achad. There's another mala ala noshim. Because the noshim b'limudom, eina mekai meshu mitzvah sese, a woman. By learning, she doesn't have per se mitzvah sese, but it's a tachlis. Like having mevoi, it's a tachlis, a vehicle to keep my mitzvahs. It's a vehicle to be able to do mitzvahs. So it comes out, v'nimso da halimur etzlon, the learning by noshim have a mevoi, right? It's a vehicle, la tachlis, which is ki mitzvahs. But it's not independent tachlis. The tachlis of the learning is to be able to do the mitzvahs properly, to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu better. Aval ba noshim have a limud gam mitzvahs li'atzmoi. K'mo yanoch ha'tfilin. Just like putting on tefillin. It's independent mitzvah. Learning is independent mitzvah. K'doyme. V'nimse. So it comes out. Have a beis b'chino, it's two aspects. Two aspects with limud ha'Torah. One aspect is to know how to do mitzvahs. One aspect is to know how to do mitzvahs. Mevoi la mitzvahs. Ve'gam tachle b'vnei atzmoi. Now, so again. So limud ha'Torah has two independent purposes. One is a vehicle to know how to do mitzvahs. But then even if I know already how to do all the mitzvahs, there's another mitzvah, separate mitzvah. Separate mitzvah of learning Torah. Where do these two aspects come from? If Yidden would have said Nishma first and then Nasa, it means Nishma we will learn, Nasa in order to do, then basically the Yidden will have one tachlis. Nishma we're learning, if you would have said Nishma first, Nishma right we're going to learn, but Nasa in order to do. So then you only get one crown. Because why? Because there's only one aspect of the mitzvah. Nasa before Nishma means Nasa. We already know how to do. Nasa, we're doing already. Nishma, there still is a mitzvah of learning. There's a mitzvah of learning even after the Nasa, even after we already know how to do the mitzvahs. That's two separate halachas, two separate aspects in the mitzvah. Vine, im hoy oimrim yisrael Nishma v'Nasa. If Yidden would have said Nishma v'Nasa, hoy hoyim b'mashmoyis kabalosom, what would be inherent? What does it mean? And Nishma first, it means like oil mitzvahs. All it means is the mekabel mitzvahs, except you have to learn in order to do mitzvahs. But then only mekabel to do mitzvahs. Nishma v'nasa means that we're only mekabel to do mitzvahs. The reason you have to learn is, why? In order to know how to do mitzvahs. El shemukhrochen l'ilmud, avada they have to learn koidim, k'dei sheyedu heichlasois. For your nishma, so it comes out that nishma is nimshach u'mavoy. Nishma means the learning is merely a tachlis to bring you to the nasa. Right? Venasa, so the tachlis is the nasa, not the nishma. The learning is not the tachlis. The learning is only a chetim to be able to do the mitzvahs. For your kabbalacha, so you only have one kabbalah. What's the kabbalah? The kabbalah is doing mitzvahs. Learning is just a chetim to be able to do the mitzvahs. You have only one kabbalah. B'shem hocha omru. Therefore, Chazal say, right? Okay, so right, Shemokam Nasa. So the Eden said first Nasa. Nasa means we will do. By saying we will do, it means they learned already. And still the Nishma, and still we're going to continue. Therefore they said Nasa first. We'll move on Melov. Shemokrochim Lilmoid Mekoidim. Va'akachom Nishma. So the Nim says, it comes out, Dav Nishma Tachlim Saratsamoi. So it comes out, it's a separate Tachlim. That's why now they have the two crowns. Because now we find out what? That there are two separate Kabbalahs. One Kabbalah is to do the mitzvahs, and of course we have to learn, but that's not an independent mitzvah. That's all part of doing the mitzvahs. But even after we know how to do the mitzvahs, after the Nasa, even after we know, still Nishma, there still comes a higher level of an independent mitzvah. Which means to say, these are the two separate things. So it comes out that Talmud Gadol, the Talmud is greater than Stam doing mitzvahs. Because learning, Rabbi Yisai, is not only a vehicle to know how to do mitzvahs, but even if you learn Kol HaTorah Kul and you know how to do all the mitzvahs, there still is an independent mitzvah of learning Torah. Which brings us now to the following in terms of behavior, human behavior. If you take a look here to number three, we have here from a Sefer Eretz Tzvi. The Eretz Tzvi, his name was Reb Arya Tzvi Frommer. And it's kedai just to know a little bit about him. Reb Arya Tzvi Frommer was a Talmud of the Yavne Nezer, of Sochachov. And the Yavne Nezer considered him to be one of the Gedoy Lador, although he was the Talmud of the Yavne Nezer. And in many, many tshuvas, you would say to him, Yofo Marto, when he writes to him, you said, well, Emeso Marto, and so on and so forth. In the tshuvas, by the way, of the Eretz Tzvi, we have the Ger Rebbe writing to him Shilas. All different Gedoyim would write to him Shilas. Rabbi Pekarsky, by the way, Forest Hills, was a Talmud of the Eretz Tzvi. He was known as the Kozlik of Aruf. The Kozlik of Aruf, that's who he was, in Poland. He unfortunately did not have any children, but Rabbi Pekarsky himself, I have here a few words that he wrote. He says, "Kameshon melamadati etzlo." I learned by him, writes Rabbi Pekarsky, many years. Shemati v'meni shir b'chol yoyim. I used to hear a shir from him every day. And I had hanoa me'oimik svarois, from the depth of his svaros, his charifis, his sharpness, b'kiyusoi, his vast knowledge. He says, the efshel halas alaksav, you cannot write the chiyus, beside when he said a shir. He says, it was transformed, the life, the excitement, the exuberance. You can't write it, he says. He says, pem apik magolis, a mouth that literally pearls came out of his mouth all the time. And he said, this chedushim, all the new insights would come without preparation. Beli hachona merosh, Rav Kotsky writes, without any preparation. Doesn't mean he never prepared, but he didn't need. Even if he didn't prepare, that would not stop him or hold back from always bringing in new insights. He says, literally he was a mayon hanaveya. He was like a live well, a spring, where we have fresh water gushing forth. He was a mayon hanaveya. And he says, his bekiyas was maflia. It was, he says, incredible bekiyas, knowledge. Knowledge, incredible knowledge, he says. And the Zohar is called a Zohar HaKodesh Baal Peh. He knew the entire Zohar HaKodesh Baal Peh also. And so on and so forth. In any case, I just want to mention that the truth is, which is not so familiar by many, that he became Rosh Yeshiva in Chachma Lublin after the Petir of Meir Shapiro. After the Petir of Meir Shapiro in 1935. When Meir Shapiro passed away at a very young age, in his 40s, so he became the Rosh Yeshiva in Lublin. It was a position that was offered to him by Meir Shapiro himself during his lifetime, and he did not accept it at that time. But when Meir Shapiro passed away, he accepted it. Just another thing, you can imagine a person like himself, he had a few meager pennies that he would just, what did he have already? But from the little that he had, he always separate miser, 10% to give to tzedakah, no matter what. If he had a penny, a tenth of it he would give away. This is the way it was. So the story goes that once he was called and summoned that he should come back, go home very quickly, that there was a fire. And it burnt and caused a lot of damage in the house. So he goes all over the place and he sees that everything is taken. Not only that, what did he have already? The only thing silver that he had was a candelabra, was a lachter. A candelabra for Shabbos. That was also melted away. Nothing. So he goes looking and looking and looking and he says, and then he begins to sob. So he says, yeah, I can understand you sobbing. Look at all the damage. That's not what I'm crying about. I'm crying, what I lost, he said. But I had put away 10% to give tzedakah. I didn't manage to give it yet. It's gone. The miser is gone. How much was the miser already? That's what was, that was choshev. That was important to him. The miser that he set aside to give away, that was gone. The fire took that away too. That's what bothered him. That's a little bit of the Eretz Tzvi that we're talking about over here. Anyway, so let's take a look here. The Eretz Tzvi. It's a very, very fascinating few lines. We'll do a part of it. And he said the following. He brings the following medrash. The medrash says something poetic. Hasayif v'asefer yordu kruchim in shemayim. The medrash says, the book and the sword both came down from heaven. Read again. Hasayif, the sword, v'asefer yordu, they came together, bound together. What does it mean? There's a message. If you do this, you'll be saved from this. If you learn the sefer, you abide by the sefer, you'll be spared by the sword. If you don't learn the sefer, then the sword. It's either sword or sefer. Pick your choice. They both came down in the Shemaim. That's the Medrash. Im tasu, right? If you do the right thing, atem nitzoylem and asayv, you'll be spared from the sword. And, matter of fact, it's the Gemara also in Avodah Zarah. The Gemara says, isayfo, if it's a sword, loy safra, that means there's no, you're not learning. And visafra, and if there's a sefer, loy saifa, fine. So he brings down a pshat from his Rebbe, which is the Avnei Nezer, which is the Sochachover, the great Goyim. Ubir, he says, Kvod Kedushas Admar Hazokin, Zechet Sadi V'Kodesh Levrocho. He said, my great Rebbe, the Avnei Nezer, Mesochachov, Beheg Demuvde, with a small little mice. Now when he said a small little mice over here, I want to tell you, the Maitre says him, the Avnei Nezer was an Edom, was a son-in-law of the Kotzke Rebbe. of the Kosker Rebbe. Everybody knows that what is something which is very, which describes, you know, when you think about Kotsk, the sharpness, the one-liners, you know, which is so to the point, extremely, extremely sharp. Kotsk was known to have very, very extremely sharp, also very temperamental person, and without going into the whole history of the Kotsk Rebbe, one of the great of the greats, no one would have realized, in spite of all the greatness of the Kotsk, because he did not write, per se, scholarly work in writing. Yet, the Avnezer, who is a great goyim of his generation, writes in the introduction, right? The introduction of his Sefer Eglital, all my knowledge of Torah comes from my father-in-law. All my from the Kotzker Rebbe. All my knowledge, he says, comes from the Kotzker Rebbe. So, he brings the following. He says this, Kishoye Bekotzk, he says, the Avnezer, when he was in Kotzk, Bimei Alumov, in his young, during his youth, in other words, probably, you know, just right after he got married, he said, I was in Kotsk, when he was in Kotsk. He was sick. The Avnezer was sick. The Zeroysa Reifim, so the doctor said, you know what? In your condition, you can't learn. Because why? You're not allowed to strain your mind. No pressure on your mind. So the doctors clearly, this is what they prescribe. The doctors warned the Avnezer, Shalim McClellan, he shouldn't learn. So what do they do? If you can't learn, if you're not going to sit and read a newspaper, what do you do? So the hibit b'sefer b'chinas oylam. I'm going to stop here for a moment. So he was looking into a sefer called b'chinas oylam. What is b'chinas oylam? Okay, there was a great, great philosopher, and certainly a great goyin, also a physician, and a poet and a Jewish poet, by the name of Rabbi Yedaya Hapnini. If you want to know what we're talking about, Rabbi Yedaya Hapnini, his dates are 1270 and 1340. Okay, going back early enough. Rabbi Yedaya Pnini. The Yedaya Pnini, basically, he was from the French Rishonim, from Provence. That's the area that he grew up in. And he wrote many, many svarim and a lot of poetry. A lot of piyutim, many, many, many different piyutim. And he was a child prodigy. At the age of 15, he already published. He already published works at the age of 15. Then the next one was the age of 17. And one of the many works that he wrote is a sefer called Bechinas Oylam. Literally translated, the examination of the world. Bechinas Oylam, the examination of the world. It's a sefer, basically it's in poetic form, in prose. And if you go through it, it's philosophy. So what we're being told over here, that when the doctors warned the Avnezer that he's not allowed to learn, so he learned the Sefer Bechinas Oylam. Learned that Sefer. Again, whose author was Rabbi Yedaya, by the way, what's Hapnini? Hapnini was actually someone who was added to his name, because Pnini, what's Pnini mean? Pearls. So Hapnini means the dispenser of pearls. Because why? Because everything that came out of his mouth was considered to be so precious, so they added him, like an appellation, was added to his name, Rabbi Yedaya Hapnini. If everyone look up an encyclopedia, name it's Rabbi Yedaya Hapnini, which means the dispenser of pearls. So again, he was nectar in 1340, realized, and one of the works that he did was called Bechinas Oylam, philosophical work. So now, the Avnezer, understand, the Avnezer was not allowed to learn, so he's learning the Sefer Bechinas Oylam. The Kotzker Rebbe walks in, the Shver of Avnezer. And he sees his Eidim, the son-in-law, is learning this philosophical work called Bechinas Oylam. So what did he say? What was his comment? Pam bo harava kodesh mikotsk zechet tzadik lebroche choystoy levakroy. So the Shver comes to visit him. Look, his son-in-law is not well. Right? So he's coming to visit him. Vom aloin, he said to him in Yiddish. Vos tiden de Bechinas Oylam. What is that Bechinas Oylam trying to accomplish? What's the tachlis of his work? The Sefer Bechinas Oylam. What is he doing? As Mahavel Develt, he's trying to show you that this world, right, is negligible. It's a false world. This is what we're trying to show you. He's trying to show you is, realize there's a real world. So the Kotzker Rebbe said, you can philosophize all the time, he says. Your mind might know it, he says, but your heart and your emotions don't want to go ahead. In other words, there's always tension. The mind knows the right thing, but the taivas and desires, the body does not want to follow the mind. The body wants to do what feels good. The body wants to eat what tastes good. The body wants to enjoy what makes it feel good. So the Kotzker said, what do you accomplish by learning Bechinas Oylam? He's trying to tell you the world is narishkeiten, in kopf weiß man, but the gift will nicht wissen. But if you learn Torah, then the Guf understands it also. That's the difference. That's what the Kosek Rebbe said to him. So you can learn Bechinas Olam, you can learn the Sefer from day to tonight. Yeah, in your mind you can know that this world really is, it's all the worldly pleasures, all the, it's meaningless. But the body doesn't want to know it. The body is a different way. But if you learn Torah, it says that makes the body also understand the right thing. That's basically what he said. He said, "Vastut and the Bechinas Olam, as Mahavil developed, he makes the world into Hevel. Was kumt arois, and that's what comes out. The seichel versteht hindert mul. Yeah, the seichel is going to understand it. Das Fleisch will nicht verstehen. The Fleisch means, but body doesn't want to understand it. A blood gemurah, he said, mach das Fleisch so loch as I vim. But if you're a blood gemurah, it makes the body also to conform, to understand. The body should follow the mind. The mind should not follow the body. So he says beautifully, he says, if you have a sword, right? If you have a sword, it means there's no Torah. You know what the sword means? A sword separates the head from the body. It means is that your mind knows the right thing, but does not influence the body. That is the mushal. That if you have a sword means to say is that it separates the head from the body. The head knows the right thing, but it has no influence on the body. It means there's no safer. There's no Torah learning. But if you have Torah learning, then there's no sword. Then the head is connected. Then the head is connected to the body. Because to the koich of Torah, yisafro, if you have the sefer, loy saifo, you don't have the head separated. There's no sword that separates the head. He says, well, so that's the difference of loy saif. So you can have a lot of knowledge, and people know a lot, many things that are right. But when it comes down to it, there's temptations. So what gives them the koich to overcome the temptations? It's one thing, he says. That is the connection that a person has to Torah. So in 2 minutes, we're just going to conclude the following, boys. We're going to stop over here. With many times, he spoke about the important significance of names. Of names. Child is born, you give him a name. You give him a Jewish name. So the truth is, Medrash says the following. Listen to this. Lo'olam yivdoik odom b'shem o'is likru l'benoi. A person should always choose the right name for a child. Yeah, this is the Medrash. The Medrash says a person should always choose the right name for a child. Horoyuli is tzaddik. In other words, choose a name that basically points in the direction that the child should be a tzaddik. Because Lepa'omim Hashem Goyrim Toi V'Goyrim Ra. You hear what Chazal say? Because many times the name itself can be an influence for good or an influence for bad. So it's not a simple thing. When you choose a name, be very careful. Because the name sometimes can have influence either for good or bad, and that is the Medrash Tanchuma. So, for example, the Arizal, right? The great Arizal, was Nifter in 1572. One of the greatest of all Baal Mekubalim. He said, when parents choose a name for their child, they really have a certain Ruach HaKodesh. It's a divine inspiration. But of course, they have to be ready to really connect with that and really to allow them to guide them to make an appropriate choice. So I'll tell you a very interesting just example of that. There was a family, a Levi, that had many children, and they would try to choose, as we're saying, names which would be appropriate, would have some meaning. For example, after B'derech Klal, they would choose a name after a great tzaddik. A name of Avigdor, they gave, for example, after Avigdor Miller, and so on. They gave a name Shraga Feivel after Shraga Feivel Mendelovich. Of course, it was one of the Rosh Yeshivas of Torah Vadas, founders of Torah Vadas, in a certain sense, not the actual founder. And or a name that has a significance, like Brocha, a blessing. Give a name, Brocha. Or Arya Simcha was one of their children, a lion of happiness, a lion of happiness, and so on. By the way, Reb Moshe Feinstein, if you look up in the Sefer Igros Moshe, in Chelik Dalet, Or Chaim, Simen, Samach Vov, he encourages everyone to name children after tzaddikim, after righteous people. Why? He says, because, especially if there's no specific reason for a specific, sometimes you have a specific reason why for a particular name, sometimes, of course. But if you have no specific reason, choose a name after a tzaddik, either of a previous generation, he says, or even sometimes living people, he says, choose a name. So we're talking about here the Levi family. Levi family was expecting a child in a month or so, and the Levi decided that if the baby was a girl, they would name the girl Tirza. They named the girl Tirza for two reasons. First of all, Tirza means like acceptable or pleasing. Tirza Moshe Rotzoin. Tirza means either acceptable or pleasing. And second, Tirza happened to be one of the five tzaddikuses of the daughters of Tzelophchad in Parshas Pinchas, who loved Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara Bava Basra goes on, right? They came to Ketamash Rabbeinu with the Tanya, we want a portion of Eretz Yisrael in place of our father. So they really expressed love for Eretz Yisrael, and one of the names of the five daughters was Tirza. That's another reason. They wanted to give the name Tirza. So it turns out that 2 weeks before the birth, always something that might happen, similar. So comes out Mr. Levy's grandmother, Sarah, passed away. And the grandmother, Sarah, passed away. And the family was sure that if the newborn were to be a girl, they would name her after that grandmother, Sarah, who just passed away. On the other hand, the Levy's also understood that how much the name Sarah would mean to the mother. The mother was still alive. Now the grandmother passed away. But the mother would want the child to be named after her mother. They understood that. But there was one problem. The problem, what they felt was, at least they felt, because you see, they were Bali Tshuva, and the Mela, therefore, they were hesitant to name children after relatives who were not Torah observant. You know, that great grandmother, that my grandmother that passed away, was not observant. So here, on the other hand, it's a grandmother, and yet it's not observant. So they preferred to give a name that would have a positive influence on the child. Right? On the other hand, they knew that Tirza, right, would have no meaning to their family. Have no meaning to their family, and would deeply disappoint the mother. The mother is still alive. And by the way, many of us are aware, if it didn't happen in our own families, we know that this can really lead to naming children as one of the a point of contention many, many times. I know of cases where, truly, numerous families actually became ripped apart. I had a case that was, time flies already, it must have been like 4 years or maybe even 5-6 years ago, literally a situation where a father would not speak to his son. The reason was is because the father wanted the son to name the baby that was born, the grandchild, the father's mother, and the son is married to a wife also, and the wife had a different preference. The daughter-in-law doesn't always have the same sensitivity to the side of the husband. So the son did not give the name that his father wanted. They did not speak. They came to me. Did not speak. So I happened to have a talk with the son. I said, you don't speak to your father. Why did you do this? So I'll tell you the truth is, my father did the same thing. He didn't name after his own mother either. He named after somebody else. I did what my father did. Anyway, this lasted for a long, long time. So these are really situations which can really rip families apart, as I'm saying. So here's the situation. So now, so the grandmother passed away, her name was Sarah, and they wanted to name the child Tirza. Well, it comes out that the child was born very close to the yahrzeit of Sarah Schneer. Sarah Schneer, which was her yahrzeit happens to be, by the way, just now, Chov of Adar. Chov of in the month of Adar, this month, Chov of Adar, really now. The founder of Bais Yaakov. So they made the cheshbon like this, that if they have to name the child Sarah, they'll name it Sarah, but they'll have in mind the naming of Sarah after Sarah Schneer. And everybody will be happy, because he's called Sarah. Who knows what they had in mind? They had in mind after Sarah, which was just Sarah Schneer. So they named the child Sarah Tirza. Both. And everybody was happy. Sarah was there, the name Sarah was there, and Tirza. A year later, as we said, they had a daughter, Brocha. They had a daughter, Brocha. The Leaves had a daughter, Brocha. So she attends a school in Muncie. She was learning about Sarah Schneer, and the school principal told the students, right, about the history of Sarah Schneer. And at the end of the lesson, the principal mentioned that Sarah Schneer passed away when? The year 1935, which is 5-6, the Hebrew is 5695. What's that in Lashon Kodesh? Tof Resh Tzadik Hei, Tirza. That's what happened. So the name Sarah, so he shows how the names divinely inspired Rabbi Yisai to realize everything is B'nai Shemayim. Just allow it to happen, it happens.